madcap lot. It was the garage.
My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive into drinking if you don't stop driving.
Now you're running car.
Tell him it's your car and you do what you want with it. I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes paid for that. They're both mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything!
Big trouble. That's the rookie Suarez up and over Regan Smith, the big one. Big trouble in the trial.
Welcome to the Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
Welcome to Throwing Wrenches. I'm Daryl Scott.
And I'm Eric Stahl. Thanks for joining us.
This, of course, if it's your first time, we'd like to welcome you. But if you've come back several times and you keep coming back to the trough because it's tasty, folks.
It's that good.
It's like the old country buffet of automotive podcasts. Although that's not our official phrase, right?
No, actually, the catchphrase for this episode, Daryl, is going to be the coldest auto podcast in the USA. Coming to you live from Central Illinois. And tomorrow morning, it's going to be negative 20 just on the air temp. And then they're saying with the wind chill, negative 40 plus. I mean, somewhere in there.
Yeah. And years ago, it was the polar vortex. I don't know if they've got a name for this one.
I think they're still calling it the vortex.
Polar vortex. Yeah. So, yeah, we're basically all freaking out here in the Midwest and points to the east. About the weather, and it's going to be pretty brutal. I've already had to jumpstart some people with bad batteries.
Oh, really?
At work.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
I thought about it. We could do a whole show just on cold weather conditions, but we got too much news, folks. This show is about cutting edge national, local, and world news in the automotive industry. So that's what we're here for. We don't have time for your petty Midwestern cold stuff.
Right. Put on a hat and go to work, as George Carlin said.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. We're gonna get through this like we always do. And it's just that couple of weeks where it's just kind of ugly, and you want to make sure. There's some real simple things you can do, and I think Eric put some stuff on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
You can follow some.
Yeah, I think AAA had some good tips.
Yeah.
Do that. But here's the thing. If you find yourself stranded in the car, figure you're going to wait 2 hours for the AAA guy to show up, this show will probably take about an hour and 15 minutes. So we'll keep you company.
I think that's a good call. I'll try to do that. I'll tell my wife you recommended that while we're waiting for AAA to pick us up out of the ditch.
All right. So, again, thanks for listening. We did get some feedback basically on the Facebook page, and that was from Tim the Barber. We had posted an article this week about the suicide at the Subaru plant. I'm not sure how the guy did it, didn't follow up on it, but, man, Tim went off on it, basically saying, look at Subaru. They're going to deal with it. They're going to talk to the family. They're going to work it out. Whereas in contrast with that, we're an American business, you know, it'd be all about how can we sue these guys for everything they're worth. Now, you had a good point when we were talking about this before about how, you know, Foxconn is building nets around their factories to keep people from killing themselves.
Yeah, that was a big news item a couple of years ago. I think they've since changed. And didn't they build a factory up in Wisconsin?
No, they're working on it. And that's kind of with eminent domain laws. It's really hacking people off.
But, nice.
Yeah. No, I think they're probably putting parachutes now on their staff. That's probably, you know, they probably figured. No.
Yeah, well, it was indicative of a bigger problem. It was the corporate culture and just the kind of terrible working conditions, I think, in China.
It was. But like we said, I hate to do that like we said, because that means we talked about this stuff off the show. I'm sorry.
It's a secret.
It is a secret. Subaru doesn't have nets around their factory, as far as we know. As far as we know, Subaru is a pretty decent company. So
yeah, they're super philanthropic. They give to a lot of charitable things.
And they could be an evil corporate domain. But in general, Subaru is known as a nice, you know, puppy-friendly, family-friendly business. And until they change that perception in my mind, I'm going to say this guy's probably mentally ill, or this gal was mentally ill. And I think anytime you have a suicide situation, there's probably more to do with life and family and mental illness than there is anything to do with where they were working. But
yeah, sad story. We can read all about it. The article is on our Facebook page. You can like us at Throwing Wrenches Podcast and kind of follow some of the discussion there. It is, again, quite sad, but it also does kind of open the door and discuss maybe what a company is, I don't want to say, like, obligated to do or how to handle it, but...
No, I think it, who thinks about these things? We do, Daryl.
This is what keeps us up at night.
All right, so the first segment of the show, if you're not familiar, is generally our project section.
Yeah.
I got a couple things in the project section this week. So,
what are we working on?
Well,
audio-visual?
I got to fix the daughter's radio and her Camry because, to be clear, the 96 Camry that she was driving had probably a subpar by today's standard sound system. It had a glorious cassette player with the second edition CD player that was on.
That was the mid-90s, early 2000s, where they were doing, like, we don't know what format you're going to have. Let's put both in there.
Yeah. This thing comes with a cassette, but we've installed the CD player as an afterthought.
That's awesome, because that was only, you know, probably like a 10-year period where they did that. It's almost a two-for-one.
Yeah, and those external CD players almost never last as long as a cassette player. You could almost bank the cassette player would last far longer than the CD player. So, anyway, I swapped it out with one of those cool $30 Bluetooth-only radios here a while back.
And, did you get it on the internet?
No.
No.
Actually, I bought it from one of my technicians who I think got it at Walmart. But
okay,
yeah,
because I've seen those pop up on eBay for like dirt cheap, and I'm like, I think
even
I need
brand
to
new
get
on Amazon, I think $39 gets you a pretty decent branded one. So
does it come with instructions or just like a series of
YouTube
illustrations?
YouTube video with poor translation, I think.
Okay. Yeah, plug this wire here on this skid.
Oh, and there's no wiring diagram. That's don't. No, this is just to operate it.
Well, so that worked though for a few years.
It did work, and it had a little like backfeed noise was kind of coming through. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, as you're driving,
that sounds
alternator whine, you know. And I'm like, she's 16, she's driving to school. It's your second car, because a 16-year-old girl should have two cars in the garage, right?
Right. You got the race car,
yeah. And the race car's radio sounded pretty good, but she said one day just went and then pop, and it's been silent ever since. So
what do kids listen to now? What is she rocking out to?
Oh God!
Here's how out of touch. I was going to say like Justin Timberlake, and that's 20 years ago.
No, he's still hot. I think.
Is he still good?
Yeah, he's still. No, she listens to all kinds of weird stuff. So my daughter's like me. She's all over the place on music style. So
what are you going to do? Put a rechargeable Bluetooth speaker in.
That's what she's been doing. She's taking the one I bought at Sam's Club and driving around with that thing. No, I'm going to buy another one. Probably they're so cheap. I'll just get another one. I think we'll find out where that ground error was at, and we'll fix that this time. So
it's all good.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I bought a radio for the other car, I wanted CD player and Bluetooth, and I wanted the speaker capability for the phone and all that. And I paid $100 and some through Crutchfield, but I don't feel like that's necessary anymore. So
no, not so much.
Yeah,
the big thing I used to always I've done a couple stereo installs. It's I'm okay at it, but. My biggest thing was always trying to get it to fit the trim and the dash and make it look nice and not rattle.
Isn't that always the hardest part?
Yeah, like the wiring and stuff. Like I can solder, I can dress a wiring harness together and, you know, make sure I got the speakers right ohmage and all that stuff like that. But it's always to get the little trim plate, especially on like Pioneers and some of the Clarions I put in, that trim plate either like rattles and falls off or a little corner tab breaks off.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hit a pothole and, you know, all your lights go out. So hopefully, is it a double din?
It's a double din, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have like the
adapter?
Well,
no, it's a single din for the Bluetooth one. It was a double din before, so it comes with a little box. You can put a little box in there now, so you can put your chapstick and maybe a, I don't know what else you put in there.
I don't remember.
A pen doesn't even fit in those things. It's so ridiculous.
No. Your insurance paperwork? I don't know.
The best thing about the old 96 Camry, not to make a sidetrack here, but the cup holders were made for a 12-ounce can, and they're right in front of the shifter. So if you try and put any larger drink in those things, as soon as you put it in park, you're basically,
it just shatters.
It could have like dumped Coca-Cola in that radio for all I know. She could have went to Casey's, got a drink, put it in there, and whoosh!
Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. Also on the project list, I'm going to call this a project because my son, who is 15 now, has a driver's permit. So the weather sucks here, so it's kind of fun to watch him drive on the snow. But he has a misconception. I know a couple of my friends listen to the show. The other day we were driving somewhere, and I'm like, dude, you got to be careful. You're going to get stuck. This thing's only a two-wheel drive truck.
Mm.
I'm not going to get stuck. I got Stork tires. What does that mean?
Stork tires?
My friend Stork, who sold me the tires from his FJ, we'd gone wheeling with him, you know, over the years, and he thinks Stork's tires are unstickable.
When did you get stuck then?
We haven't gotten stuck yet, but it was funny because my buddy Jake, who listens to podcasts well, I think, he sent a picture back to me when I told him the story of Stork being stuck, saying, show your son this.
Kind of took him down a peg a little bit.
My son's still uber confident with those tires. They are nice tires. They're, you know, BF Goodrich. I think they're BF Goodrich. Yeah, they're BF Goodrich. And they're fun. KO2s. They're fun tires. And they're about half worn out, and they're fun.
Well, wish him luck. It's good. We were talking earlier. I think it's good to drive. Learn to drive in the wintertime here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
I was a summer school driver's ed grad, and life was good. And then that, you know, December
first
snowstorm.
Winter, yeah.
Like, what's this?
With the Astro.
Yeah, with the Astro. It's called snow, son. Yeah. It happens here. So, good for him.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the 4Runner's been fun. We can talk about that in another show next as he gets more experience. But he's driving that 4Runner. That thing's like driving a sponge, and our other car is like a hot rod compared to it. So,
so he's safe, is what you're
saying. Yeah, when he rides with me, I'm like, he drives fine. My wife's like, he drives like a maniac. I'm like, he drives fine.
They all do.
Speaking of the wife, she called me the other day quite upset. She drives 155 every day down to Lincoln to work, and there was a terrible accident in front of her. She didn't see what happened. But what she did see was a body laying on the road, and she was one of the first two or three vehicles to get there. Mm. And this minivan was laid up in front of a grain truck on 155.
Head on?
Yeah, it looked like a head on. And the body was on the pavement. So my wife got out of the car and said, does anybody need medical attention? And they're like, she's dead. And then another person got up and said, I'm a doctor. I can help. And they're like, my wife's like, thank God. But in the meantime, said the body was like contorted on the pavement.
Wow.
So it was hideous. But and the farmer got a tarp out of his truck and put over the body. But come to find out, after let me tell you this. My wife was so shaken. She was just flat shaken. And it was the night that you and I hung out last Tuesday. She didn't even want to drive to Peoria that night. She was still shaken by it. So, but come to find out after reading the article, the woman was driving from Kansas City. And I don't know if she was driving from that night before, but this is 7 a.m. in the morning near Lincoln. So if she was driving from Kansas City from early in the morning or the night before, what happened was she left the other lane approaching. So she was in the opposite lane. Somehow the car went out of control and rolled a couple times through the median and hit the grain truck on the other side.
Oh, wow.
And she wasn't wearing her seatbelt.
Okay.
So God knows what happened. I think maybe, you know, if I had to guess, you know, she was probably tired.
Maybe fell asleep.
Maybe. But why wasn't she wearing a seatbelt?
Yeah,
I don't speak for you, Daryl. I know myself. I don't go anywhere without putting a seatbelt on.
Sure.
Even putting gas in a car at the Casey's up the street.
Sure,
I put my seatbelt on.
Yeah, my heart goes out to her and the victims and to your wife for having to, you know, kind of come across that. That's terrible. But I've seen, you know, my share of kind of grisly accidents too, where people are not restrained.
Really?
Yeah, I came across that. You know, probably about 15 years ago, I saw a guy hit a windshield and hit a limousine broadside, and he got out of the car and was walking, like he was fine, and then just fell down in the weeds. You know, I don't understand. I will admit, if I'm just running to the post office or something quick, a lot of times I'm that guy who's just like, "Meh, I'm fine," and then about halfway down the street, I'm like, "Nah, I better buckle up," which is dumb. And my wife yells at me all the time, especially having a dad who is a driver's ed teacher who instilled that as kids.
You're a rebel, Daryl.
Well, we wouldn't leave the driveway. You know, it's like I'm not going anywhere until all you kids buckle up and all that.
Seriously,
so that was a big deal. Wow. And at some point, I became old, fat, and lazy. So it's not an excuse. It's just take 2 seconds, buckle up, and you know everything else that you don't have any control over. You know, who knows what's going to happen? But that's the one thing you can do that's going to protect you probably more so than anything else.
Yeah.
And your airbag, all that stuff, that's not going to work unless you get the seatbelt going on. So horrible story. I hope. Hope people can learn from that.
Yeah, it just sucks. I mean, what really sucks to me is like you're in Kansas City and they say, hey, the state police calls. There's been an accident. You know, we have a casualty. I'm like, yeah, who wants to make that call? Who even wants?
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah. Well, and then all the what ifs. You know, what if she was wearing a belt? Yeah. Would she have survived? You know,
that's hard to say.
Terrible.
And she's about our age. I think she's about 50. Well, it's not. You're like 30, but anyway.
A little more, but yeah.
Yeah, and also proud to say I talked to the Champaign County Sports Car Club about a sponsorship last year from the dealership, and just a small sponsorship with them is like $250, but you get on 750 shirts with those guys.
Oh, wow.
And they pimp you on their website and all their events and stuff like that.
How long is that season?
It's for a whole year.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think I was happy to fill out the check request for that. I think I'm really proud to say, you know, we'll be on the banner and everything for those guys. So
very cool.
So it was cool.
Actively going to be campaigning the FRS again?
Yes. Yes. Excellent. I've already, my employees are chomping at the bit. Everybody's dying to get back. I love it. This time of year you get the cabin fever and you stare at that car, you know, on the showroom floor. It's got the Chuck Norris sticker. It's got the 86 on the side. I had a customer actually want to talk about it with me today. on the showroom floor. It's having a blast.
Nice.
And, yeah, I just can't wait to get it back on the track.
For those of you who are just joining us for the first time, Eric's dealership that he works at sponsors a, what's it, 2013
FRS.
Toyota FRS, which is a really, really hot little platform. They've done some minor tweaks to it, and it sticks to the road.
Yeah,
does
all suspension
good
and tires. You'd be amazed what you can do. You can run with the vets.
Yep.
If you take care of your tires and your suspension.
So watch for it in the upcoming season at an autocross event near you.
Yeah, we didn't talk about ourselves, Daryl, so nobody knows who we are. We're incognito this show.
We're incognitus.
So what do you have going on over there in Peoria?
Not too much. It's been pretty cold and crummy, so just trying to kind of get through the days.
You need heat in that garage.
I don't. I need to start getting on that. So I've got a whole bunch of cabinets, a bunch of old cabinets, and some countertops and things that I need to... They're sitting in the basement, and I'm like, someday I'll put this in the garage. Well, then I complain the basement's full of garbage. Well, it's because I've got it filled with other garbage that isn't supposed to be in there. So my goal this spring is to maybe enlist some help and get the garage kind of tidied up a little bit so I can organize my tools, organize all my junk, and get my basement reclaimed so I can start working down there. But mainly the latest thing I've been doing is chasing down just a couple little minor rattles here and there. And there's nothing worse than chasing down a rattle, I think, except maybe like, you know, tearing a whole dashboard apart to do a heater core.
I know, it's 0 degrees. Rattles are kind of hard to tin down, aren't they?
And that's always when they pop up.
Yeah.
It's always when the temperature drops and then you start messing with stuff and the plastic gets all brittle and you break it because you can't feel your hands. And
if you had a heated garage, you keep the car warm. It'll all come apart, Daryl.
That's what I need to be doing. So I'll get on that. But yeah, for right now, that's what I'm doing, just kind of biding my time and then planning some small things. I've been ordering some crap off eBay, too, for some of the other projects I got going on. So I'm trying to stockpile all my parts for when it gets a little warmer so I can go out and get some stuff done. Yeah. So
I can tell you my Tundra has an epic rattle at 0 degrees. Epic.
Really?
The dash just, oh, my God, you would think.
Sounds like marbles.
Yes. But, man, when it gets above 30, that noise is gone. So I'm like, don't care enough. So, you know.
I will say, too, and I don't want to get sidebarred with this, but when the weather does drop like this, just one big common sense thing. You're talking about cup holders.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine years ago whose mom was a teacher, and she started the day with a giant thing of coffee, right?
Oh, boy.
And she had one of the Chrysler minivans, and she used to bring just a mug of coffee. And, of course, I think she probably made it, sat on the counter, warmed up, and she went out. It was like, you know, 5 below or something like that. And she sets the mug on the center of the dash. And the dash, you know, the turkey in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation where it cuts it and it splits into 20 pieces? The dashboard, the vinyl just went and cracked the whole top of the dash with a hot mug of coffee. And then she's like, I don't understand what happened.
Hey, I've done that before where I took my hat when I was defrosting my windshield. I took my hat and I threw it up on the defroster. I'm like, oh, this will help. I'll get my hat all dried out. But what I end up doing was, I end up getting the middle of the windshield not getting warmed up at all, whereas the edges were getting warm.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, the whole windshield just went...
Just spiderwebbed.
Yeah, just spiderwebbed everywhere. Like, son of a...
Just from diverting the...
Yeah, because you're not letting the flow be equal across the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had other times where a buddy of mine drove over a set of railroad tracks and the back window shattered and was below zero because he turned the defroster on. He thought somehow that did it. I'm like, hey, the cold weather does weird stuff.
No, I've seen there's plenty of hatchback models, speaking of hot hatches and stuff like we have in the past, that the back windshield just drops out of them and you hit the defroster. I've seen it. You know, not so much anymore because hatchbacks aren't cool anymore. But,
I guess.
But man, over the last 10 years, I've probably seen a dozen times. All I did was turn on the defroster and psh!
Yeah, it's like somebody shot it out. So be careful out there, folks. Winter's rough.
Yeah.
Be careful.
All right, so this is the section of the show where we talk about the headlines in the world.
And speaking of hot cars.
Hot cars, the hottest car, and the big headlines. This car transcends every auto forum possible. I mean, whether it's the Central Illinois beer nerd, sorry, not beer nerds, but the car nerds.
Auto enthusiasts.
Yeah, or Jalopnik or anybody else. The Supra, the 2020 Supra that sold on... was it Meacham? Who was it?
Yeah, I think it was the Meacham?
Was it Meacham?
I think so. I don't know.
What, $2.5 million?
It was redonkulous.
Yeah.
A
car that's going to sell for $55,000 went for $2.5 million.
I want to be the first.
Yes. We won't get much into it because there's not a whole lot that I can talk about in that car right now. Not because I don't know it, not because I can't look it up, but really it's not even a car that's close to being in the showroom, so we'll leave it where it is. I think the biggest problem for me, and And apparently the biggest problem for most other people that are critical of the car is just their relationship with BMW on it. And I've listened to some people in the know, and they all told me the same thing. Hey, Toyota would never made that car if it hadn't been for their relationship with BMW, because they just wouldn't put the time and talent to it. But they have the motors, they have the skills, and that's what kills the purists and the Toyota fan.
So for the layman, what did they actually outsource or collaborate with BMW on? Was it the design of the chassis, the motor, the whole nine yards, electronics? Because at the end of the day,
I think the car is 75% BMW. I mean, I think the chassis and the engine, the driveline is all BMW. The engine's BMW.
Yeah.
So you're not going to put a Toyota module in there. You're not going to, as far as a control module, you're not going to have Toyota ABS system with the, you know, BMW yeah. brakes. This car is a modified BMW.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it. And I guess that's the galling part about it. And really what galls me. I put a picture of this on our notes, our show notes. It was the BMW shifter. And I know BMW has a name for these shifters.
Is it part of their iDrive or something?
Yeah.
That's all like, yeah.
Yeah, and
electronic.
So, yeah, and iDrive doesn't have a great name even in the world of motorsports. And
no.
People hate these shifters. They're complicated. And that to me, when I'm sitting in the car and I'm looking at that Toyota logo behind the steering wheel, I'm still going to look down and see that BMW shifter, and I'm going to know that the guts of this thing aren't Japanese. And I don't know, and maybe I'm being real superficial, but man.
Superficial?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Get it? Well, the Supra took a hiatus. When was the last Supra that we know here?
The Mark IV.
Was it like 2003, 4,
no,
something
it
like
was
that?
97, I believe, was the last one.
Okay, so the one that's like the Fast and Furious, like the big epic one, yep. That everybody's like, yeah, bro.
Yeah, the Paul Walker one was like a 93 or 94, but the last, the collector's edition one was like 97, I think, and then they were done.
Okay, so then after that,
It may have been a 98. I don't think there was, but I'm not sure.
After that, the hottest, so to speak, Toyota you could get with a Toyota nameplate on it was a Celica.
Well, and that even took a hiatus until the early 2000s. They brought that car back, but that basically had a Corolla motor in it with they had a super duper, you know, variable valve time,
okay.
200 horsepower one, and then they had just kind of a regular plain Jane. But those cars, they were no Supra.
Yeah.
You know, the six-cylinder in the Supra, the inline six, you know, the massive horsepower, the twin turbo,
mm-hmm.
basically launching, you know, to 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, a hot car.
Yeah, exactly. You can take the restrictors off of them and just have a ton of fun. So
this thing is kind of come back out in the next model year or be released later
I think
this year?
They said later this summer. Okay. So, you know, how manufacturers are. If it's a 2020, we've got to release it in September of the year before, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah, so. I don't know. We'll see. There's been definitely a lot of ink written about it. Not really. Nobody writes in ink anymore.
Yeah.
So a lot of print, a lot of people chattering on the forums about that vehicle. Love it or hate it, let us know what you think. We'd love to always engage in some conversation and kind of see what check the pulse, if you will. I don't know. BMW used to have a pretty good reputation, and I think that's kind of fallen out of favor. I think they've had some issues with build quality. Right?
I think they are known now as if you can afford to drive one, you can afford to deal with the pain.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where they're at. You don't see people having fun with those after they've had 20 years on those cars, because I think people are scared away by them. They're too expensive to play with.
It's a shame. I think it has a lot to do with all the electronic gizmos that are in them now, whereas you could still find a mid to late 90s like E36 M3 for like $6,500 and go beat on it, have fun, take it to your autocross events, and the thing will still run and drive, and you can maintain it. Whereas now, you got something that's 2 years old, you got the little LED halo thing that goes, it's $600 to replace your headlight bulb on those things. So
I always tell people, I said, buy the extended warranty on your car if you're going to keep it, because it's not going to be the engine transmission that goes out. I can guarantee you right now, the odds of the engine your transmission going out on any modern car are slim to none. It's going to be that power wiper motor that's $500 that's going to drive you nuts. It's going to be, you know, a power window motor that's $700,
mm-hmm.
or it's computer controlled, or oh god, I mean, and you'll be like, oh wait a second, I could have bought a warranty for $1,500.
Yeah, I decided to pass. Now every light on my dash is on, and nothing works,
and no two sensors, $400. So, it's the little things that drive you nuts on these cars. It's not the big stuff.
All right, what else you got in the world news tonight here?
Okay, so last episode we talked about Carlos Ghosn, and if you're not familiar with him, he is the embattled ex-CEO of Nissan. He got fired this week, but he also is still the head of Renault, which I did not realize this. So,
whoops.
Yeah. So France right now, if you're not aware, is kind of struggling with austerity measures. I mean, people are not liking getting taxed to pay for, you know, services, and they're not they're protesting in the streets in these yellow vests. But what I just found out was that France owns 15% of Renault, and Renault is trying to figure out about this $25 million golden parachute that they have for Ghosn, who sits in a jail in Japan right now for possibly the next 3 months for some scandals he's got going on. So I imagine the people in France will be protesting once again once Renault figures out how to pay him out of this contract.
$25 million.
That could be francs, but I think it was $1 million.
Still, it's a lot of cabbage.
Well, actually, they don't do francs anymore. It's euros, isn't it?
I think so.
So that might even be more than dollars.
You know, when are we going to get with the program when it comes to executive golden parachutes and buyout clauses?
I don't know.
Especially if
it's a criminal.
Especially if it's something that you did that's maybe not on the up and up, you know? I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe kick it up to legal next time you hire one of these VPs or CEOs and just be like, yeah, I don't know about this clause here. We're going to strike that.
Hey, we got an egg basket here. We put a lot of eggs in. No, let's just put one big egg in there, and we'll carry this around. And then when it screws up, we got a big mess.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Renault's been having trouble for a long time. You remember in the 80s, they actually... I don't know if they got bought or they partnered. They had an alliance with Chrysler, AMC.
Yeah.
And that was a whole weird
LeCar.
Thing. Yeah, they had it started importing the LeCar.
What else did they have?
They had the Medallion, the Encore, the
Encore.
Alliance.
Yeah, the Alliance.
They had
the Alliance is a hideous car, really.
It was, Encore was gross. That was the hatchback.
Which was the one that looked like a dart? That was the Alliance, wasn't it?
It kind of looked like a... Yeah, a dart smashed up with a K car. And then they also had the sports car, which a good friend of mine has. Just kidding, he doesn't have it. It's a Renault Fuego.
Oh, a Fuego.
Fuego. And that was a little turbocharged sports car that was designed by, like, Giorgetto Giugiaro or whatever his name is. That designed, like, all the cool, like, Volkswagens of the 80s and things, real squared off, kind of neat looking.
Uh-huh.
It was a beautiful little car, and it was a turd. It did not... perform. It had all kinds of problems. We tried to do the French thing here. Peugeots used to be sold here. That didn't work. I think we even tried selling, I'm trying to think of some others. I don't know. Those are pretty much the only ones I know.
I think I'm going to get a harmonica out, and next time we do any Ghosn segments,
okay.
I'm going to get a harmonica.
Do a little blues.
When I was thrown in jail in Nissan. My mama said, how are you going to pay those bills? I got 25 million francs coming, mama.
I think you could do a little blues and B-flat.
Yeah,
you know?
All right.
Carlos Ghosn blues. Oh, man. Well,
it's too much fun making fun of the rich, so we will continue to do that.
Yeah. Speaking of rich people, Prince Philip crashed his Land Rover. That was
who's
in the
richer,
news.
Carlos Ghosn or Prince Philip?
Probably Prince Philip.
Okay.
I would venture. He's a spry 97 years old, 97 years young.
Yeah.
Wound up rolling the thing, at least on its side. I don't know where he was headed. I didn't even pay attention to that part of the story. But he was on some country road.
I think he was in one of his mansions or something like that.
As he's wanting to do, the royals like to drive themselves around from time to time. Because that is, you know, a luxury that's afforded to us commoners, us normies, and normies over there. But they also decide to, you know, take a little jaunt down a country road now and then. Well, he crashed, and then in the accident, I guess, he said the sun blinded him. The sun. Which, you know, that happens every...
That happens.
7 a.m. to 7 p.m., yeah. Something like that.
Well, it wasn't a busy interstate. He had that going for him.
No, he flipped the thing, and then he injured a woman, and she was driving with her younger kids in the car. Broke her arm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was pretty minor. She was treated and released and everything, and her kids were fine.
Treated and released.
But he wrote, and this is the quaint, cute little part, he wrote a nice little apology to the woman and her family for breaking her arm, and for his part in the accident... His part.
Yeah.
You had a part too, young lady, is what that implies. But anyways.
Well, the son had a part. Maybe it was the son's part. I mean,
it's nobody's fault.
It's an act of God, Daryl.
It's a no-fault accident involving...
Royalty.
97-year-old royalty. But the interesting part is that they still, over there, get to drive around themselves. Whereas here, as soon as you're elected president or vice president, you know...
You're probably never driving again.
You're toast. You're in the back of a car, an SUV. You don't get to drive around. I don't know if you watch the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
With Seinfeld.
Love that show.
The one with, like, Barack Obama and the Corvette and Joe Biden.
I don't think I watched those two.
It was neat. They're like, hey, we want to have you drive this thing. I think they had Obama. I think both Obama and Biden drove a Corvette, because I think actually Biden, I think, had a Corvette. Or still does, like a 65 or something like that. But he couldn't drive.
He takes the train from Baltimore every day, Daryl.
Right. So, but I remember that was the big thing. They were in like the little driveway of the White House, and they could only drive for a little stretch
of
it.
Are you kidding me?
And the Secret Service guys were like, okay, that's enough. Yeah, because he really wanted
They couldn't like fly him to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and just send him out, you know, here's a flat stretch of road out in the middle of nowhere. Let's just have some fun.
Yeah, rent out a test track or something.
For God's sakes.
No, but over there in the UK, I think I need to go buy some Cadbury Flake Bars.
They do make the best chocolate over there.
They do. They do. So, I mean, that kind of brought... I mean, Eric was fairly passionate about this last week. I just want to throw this out here. I was like, 97 years old, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show because we've got some other segments. I mean, the Enfuego thing, I mean, I think the show is all about parody tonight. But
yeah.
97 years old. First off... Do you know anybody yourself personally who's 97 years old and still drives?
No.
Because I don't.
No, not that old.
I don't have any customers who are 97 years old and still drive. So I think the fact that he's in a car driving around. Now, if it was on his own property, that's a whole different thing. I let my kids drive around my property.
Sure.
You know, even I let them drive my property when they were 12. So I think that that's okay with me. But if this guy's getting on the road at 97, and 97 is a celebrity who's been maintained and
he's doing pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, he looks pretty decent for 97 years old.
He was too sick to go to the wedding, though, a couple months ago, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, he's entitled. Maybe he didn't, you know, maybe that's one of those things where somebody says they're too sick to go. I say that sometimes. I'm too sick to go.
I can't go. I can't go to this monumentally
historic. Remember that
party
at your house, Daryl? No, it's
good. Yeah, it was pretty rough. So, yeah, I don't know. So you're saying basically you get to a point. Well, we'll circle back.
We'll circle back. We got some other stuff we're going to talk about on this. I think that 97, at some point, you just take the license. I don't care if he's the King of England.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's rarely can you say, I don't care if he's the King of England, but he is the King of England.
Sort of.
Kind of. I mean, technically, right?
Well.
If he's married to the Queen, wouldn't he be a king?
No, he's a prince. There's some weird formula I don't understand. I was sick that day in school when they talked about that. Monarchies. Anyway, speaking of monarchies, Queen Elizabeth, little side note, she used to be a truck driver and mechanic in World War II, which I thought was pretty sweet.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah. She was, there's some cool pictures. If you do a little Google image searching, you can actually see a young 18-year-old Queen Elizabeth, like, wrenching on, like, some old Perkins diesel under the hood of some nice British truck.
Did you learn that from watching The Royals?
I did not, but my wife is obsessed with anything that has to do with...
Whose wife isn't obsessed with The Royals?
Oh, man. I tell you, my TV has a British accent. It doesn't matter what channel it's on now.
Well, the British Baking Show. Did you start watching that again after I played it for you?
Yeah, I did. I'm still working on my sponge cake.
Bread week, baby. I'm all about bread week.
It's good stuff. All right, so should we shift gears and come back to this side of the pond?
Yeah, we're going to get to national news, which is our segment where we talk about things that are affecting everybody in America. And this is actually, we get a little newsier. Actually, I have articles we're going to read here. So this article came out of a publication I get every other day through the through my networking stuff. But it's called
Through Your Connections.
Yeah, it's fixedopsbusiness.com, and it's sent out to service people. Interesting article, came out January 16th. Carbon, a Silicon Valley-based digital manufacturing company, showed the first digitally manufactured polymer parts in production for the Ford company.
Hmm.
The parts include a Ford Focus HVAC heating and ventilation and cooling lever arm and service parts for an F-150 Raptor, auxiliary plugs for a niche market, blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to tell you, Daryl, this paradigm shift right here, this is huge. This is literally sticking your toe in an ocean of possibilities. I have talked about this for a while, and there's not a lot of people that care about this stuff. And it may seem very...
It seems like nerdish, right?
It
does. Borderline like, nerd stuff. But what we're basically talking about, I mean, for just in plain English, you're talking about the ability to either use a 3D printer or some other kind of a at-home mold making or on-demand.
Thank you, Daryl, for dumbing it down, because I'm just going to dive so deep into the nerddom on this thing.
Make your own parts.
Yeah, but basically, you know, tradition says... If you come into the dealership or you go to O'Reilly, you order a part based on, you know, what all or whatever schematic you're looking at says, oh, you need this part. Well, then we need to go to a warehouse where we have a stockpile of these parts, you know, waiting to be delivered. And if it's a frequent part, we'll have it on the shelf. But likely for an HVAC part or something like that, it's very specific to that vehicle. So we got to get it from the manufacturer. And when you got to get it from the manufacturer, guess what? Costs more. this shift right here shows a possibility of not having to warehouse anything. We're only warehousing the design, and potentially we're creating what we need there on the spot. I don't think that, I said this before, I don't think that it's realistic to think that a Ford dealer could have an amazing printer, because you got to have an amazing printer. This isn't the $200 printer you buy for your kid to, you know, to make Star Wars figures, something
right,
like that.
Yeah.
This is basically, it's a bath of polymer where you shoot lasers through it, and it makes perfect models. There's a wash process. These are very nice devices, and you're getting quality parts. So this
takes some skill to run them, too.
It does. It takes a technical skill, and it also takes skill to service them, too, because they're not going to be something that doesn't break down. But I think that as a Ford dealer, I think it's bleeding edge. I don't think that a Ford dealer can possibly print enough parts for a printer that's possibly $10,000 or $12,000 to push out these parts and make them worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
But think about the possibilities if the aftermarket could buy all the plans for what they need, or even as a manufacturer. Let's just say that a manufacturer leases out a subscription to their parts and all the CAD designs. So if you're O'Reilly or if you're Pep Boys, you have the ability to print that part. So now I'm a customer at home. I'm working on something. Crap, I just broke that louver on my blend door on my 85 Jaguar or something like that.
Right, yeah.
Bam. Yep. Call Pep Boys. You have one? Can make one for you in an hour. That is an amazing paradigm shift to me. That the industry in 5 to 10 years from now, with that kind of technology, the sky's the limit. In the whole warehousing system, the whole transport system, everything you know about the way business is done, mm-hmm. on some level, could just be gone. It could just be zapped.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
It's fascinating. Previously, the only other place I've seen that used is very, very rich collectors. People like Jay Leno, he's had a whole, there's a couple of videos where he talks about his 3D printer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was something that for years ago, like a lot of his cars you can't get parts for. They'll have some guy machine it, they'll have some guy make it, whatever. Well, he's now got one of his guys in his shop, and all he does is do, like, oh, you need a lock actuator for, like, the power lock on a 68 Imperial? I'll make one, you know, like... Yeah. And that stuff is great, but if you have the pocket to, you know, pocketbook
yeah,
to support
and,
it.
And that's definitely bleeding edge, because that's all custom stuff there.
Sure.
But the technology's there, all the newer cars, everything's a CAD design.
Yeah.
Everything. And so we're dealing with plastics now. I mean, metal will come,
mm-hmm.
you know, so if you need a carburetor, if you need something, you know.
Sure.
It's going to be pretty amazing. And so I was saying in my show notes, you know, I was looking forward to 5 years from now, retiring and just mowing yards, just kicking back. But this is the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night because it's so damn cool. And this is why this is the type of stuff that makes you want to stay in the business.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, I want to see what happens. I want to be part of these technology changes. So I could see being very passionate about something like this. Hopefully it doesn't just like die down and doesn't get like squashed under somebody's industrial boot. But
I don't think so. I think it also solves the biggest problem for them, which is overhead.
Yeah,
they don't want to have the biggest thing that the biggest waste of money is to put all that R&D into the parts, the design, all that stuff, and then have tons of them sitting in dealerships' shelves.
Yeah,
and then 10 years later, what do you do with that? It's all lost. I see people that buy. There's a whole cottage industry of surplus companies that go in and buy all that stuff.
Absolutely. So it just led me, and I hadn't thought about this, but how many times do we get online at the dealership and we want to look for a part for an old Land Cruiser, and we can see by the parts inventory across the country, there's only 5 or 10 or 15 of these parts. Well, what do you do when there's 5 of those parts on the shelf? You buy all 5.
Yep.
Because you want to run the risk that a year from now, those parts are gone and they're never making them again. They're under no commitment to bring more of those parts back here. So if you don't have to worry about them being on the shelf anymore and you can print them yourself, it changes a lot of the dynamic for sure.
It does. And like you said, the aftermarket, that whole industry is ripe for that too.
Yeah.
So,
I'm available for consulting, folks.
Yeah, there you go. Your sponsorship. That's awesome. Good story. We'll put a link up there on
The company's called Carbon. They are not available to be invested in. Apparently, they're a private equity company because I already looked.
Tried. Look, I'm the answer to your problems.
No, it wasn't even for a job. I'm going to throw some of my retirement money into that because I do believe in what they're doing. So, anyway.
Right on. All right.
What do you got here, Daryl? It's your turn.
We're going to go. Actually, we're going to stay in California. We're going to move out of Silicon Valley, but we're going to just go into San Fernando Valley. We're going to talk about some of the new laws that have taken effect nationwide this year, include some of the worst laws I think I've heard of.
Illinois has some good ones. I don't know.
Illinois is just definitely a second runner-up. But California, you take the cake here. There's an article in Jalopnik that we're going to talk about here. And I'm sure you've probably seen some other chatter on the interwebs about this. California no longer offers a fix-it ticket when you get pulled over and you got a loud exhaust. Used to be able to write you up. Of course, California, they've always been strict on aftermarket stuff, bumper height, suspension lowering.
Illinois is tight on that stuff, too.
They're pretty, yeah. Have you ever seen anybody?
I think it's all municipalities, easy for me to say.
I think so.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you go to North Pekin, there's a problem.
Yeah.
If you go to Creve Coeur, there's a problem. But you drive into Delavan or something like that, they don't care.
They'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. California was always pretty strict, especially when it comes to noise pollution, any kind of aftermarket exhaust system, especially with all the strict emissions requirements out there. Might have had to order some aftermarket parts for your car or truck, and you always see like 50 state legal or not for sale in California because it wouldn't pass the CARB. The California Air Resources Board wouldn't give them their seal of approval to sell a lot of that aftermarket stuff. Bottom line is anything louder than 95 decibels, you get a ticket. And then you go to court and be like, Your Honor, I changed it back to the stock exhaust. Life is good. Usually you get thrown out or you get a little fine, and that's that. Well, no longer is that option of getting it fixed on the table. As of January 1st, anything louder than 95 decibels, you get a ticket and you're fined. I forget what the fine is. I think it's like $300 or maybe more, something like that. There's some more details there. But the biggest problem I have with that is, much like the loud music ordinances with car stereos that they pass here in Peoria, or window tint, things like that, I think it's another tool that is used by law enforcement, and I love law enforcement. I'm not knocking law enforcement. I think it's just another one of those tools that can unfortunately be used in certain instances to profile a particular person or type of people.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think the youngster is going to be in danger of being pulled over for that, and it certainly will give you an excuse. Yeah.
To give you a window into the vehicle and, what do I smell in there? You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not saying. I mean, everybody was dumb. I mean, I had glass packs on one of my trucks years ago. I mean, everybody's done some stupid stuff with their vehicle in years past or maybe even today. But by and large, they're not pulling over mom and dad in the Subaru Outback. They're pulling over the youngsters with the 5-liter Mustangs and, whatever Japanese cars they're souping up.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, here's the biggest problem I have with that. Not just the whole profiling thing, because that's a whole other argument that we may or may not want to get into. The biggest thing is, how is that defined? What's 95 decibels or louder than 95 decibels? And in the law, it says the language, quote, officers use sound professional judgment.
Kind of like the ones who knock in somebody's door and start shooting people when they go in the wrong apartment.
Yeah.
Is that sound judgment?
Well.
All right, we won't get into all that.
It's the whole discretion.
Yeah.
And I've taken enough law enforcement courses. I was a cop washout. I changed my mind.
Really?
Later.
You?
Yeah, when I was at Western, I took some courses, and I was pretty...
They were big on law enforcement over there.
They were. It was one of the top schools in the country. Yeah. They were really good. But and for a split period of time, I thought I was going to be a cop. But I took a lot of courses, and the whole thing is discretion. So,
you'd be the good cop, by the way. They'd be like a bad cop. Hey.
Maybe.
But you'd come in there, hey, I'm just here to help you.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I probably couldn't pass the physical, but yeah.
I've seen the guys. I think you'd be okay.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how that goes, but I know it's getting a lot of negative press, and I understand people want to clean this up, especially the older I get, the older everybody gets. You got your windows open in spring or summer, and you listen to some idiot in some car just, giving it hell. That's not cool, and I know there's a time and a place, but at the same time, let some of that go.
Well,
let it go.
Now, do you ever go to the courthouse and have to deal with any traffic court stuff? Have you watched the whole violation process and going to the state's attorney and having the proof and all that stuff? Have you gone through this stuff?
I have been thankful enough not to have to deal with it.
So, in my life as a moronic car driver over the years and pleading for court supervision and things like that, I've had to stand there at the Tazewell County Courthouse and plead my defense, can I get court supervision? And the state attorney's like, okay, I talked to the judge, it'll be $300, blah, blah. I have to believe that somebody probably looked at this and said, and I'm playing devil's advocate. That they're like, we write all these tickets for noise violations, but 95% of them get knocked out. So they're probably like, why do we bother? Let's just put a fine on it and just be done with it. That's they probably figured they're saving themselves the paperwork, not to mention that the time that the state's attorney and the judges spend going back and forth for washout tickets, because they do that with insurance tickets.
Yeah.
As it is right now. If you don't have insurance, you just have to go into the courthouse and show them, hey, I got insurance.
I couldn't find it when I got pulled over.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So
I get
it. I think that this is just streamlining the process, but it's definitely lining the pockets of California a little bit to their advantage.
I will also say this, too, and I felt very strongly when I lived in the collar counties up in Chicago with the whole emissions test.
Yeah.
What happens if you fail the test? Well, then you have to spend more money on something to try to get it to pass and then prove either passes or you spent enough for that calendar year and you'll try it again next year.
Yeah.
It's another one of those instances if you're, you know, a dude with three kids at home and life's kicked you in the nuts and you don't have any money, you're driving an 82 Econoline, you know, that sucks because you're never going to get out of that rut.
No.
Same thing with this. What's loud cars and loud trucks? Usually it's somebody who purposely makes them that way, hot rod them or whatever.
Yeah.
Or somebody who, hey, man, my muffler fell off. I got no money. Or I'm driving this car. It's got a stainless exhaust system, and it's going to cost $1,000 because it needs a new converter, too. I got to get to work. I don't have money for this.
Yeah.
So you're going to kick those people again.
Well, the hardest thing, and so I posted this on the Facebook page. But not Rauner, who's our Pritzker.
Pritzker,
just signed into effect that he's going to now honor the Paris Accord, blah, blah, whatever. But here's the biggest thing for me. If you push emission standards downstate.
Right. That's always been on the table.
But the problem is, just like you said, the people who can't afford it are going to have to deal with it. And you're putting it into areas where public transportation is not an option.
Correct.
So it'd be one thing if you could say, hey, Billy Joe, Jim Bob, your truck's too loud and you got check engine light on and you burn up the atmosphere of that thing.
Right.
Get it fixed or else. Well, then you basically cut this guy off from his income, his job, or he's going to risk breaking the law on this thing.
Yeah.
Because he can't, there's no other economical way for him to get a living.
Right. You can't can't get a CityLink bus pass if you live in Minear.
No.
Yeah.
So it's I want to drop a swear word, but we keep this podcast clean. So.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely a bigger issue, and it's to oversimplify and just say, well, just don't have a loud exhaust. That's like something like your fifth grade. I say that as my fifth grade teacher. You know,
nobody remembers when
they
were 20. Nobody remembers when they were 20. That's the hardest thing.
I
am blessed in some ways to work with 20-year-olds and 50-year-olds. I see all sides of it. I remember because I can compare it to what I was working with these young kids, and they are stupid, and they idealize the things that they love and the things that they do remind me so much of the stupid stuff I used to do.
Yeah,
and I look down at like you're just stupid, but you have
but you'll outgrow it.
You have to learn these things yourself. It's like when I'm dealing with my daughter right now. I'm like, you know, this boy's not worth it. But you know what? She's 17.
Right.
She's got to figure it out herself. So.
Everybody's cramping my style, man.
Exactly. So,
all right, we're going to stay in California, Eric, here for this next story because we love California. Apparently, we're thinking warm places.
Apparently, California is the hub of automotive industry. All right. So this is still in national news here. This was big news, and it was going to be the moment of Musk. But it is not now. We've decided to break this off into national news itself. Tesla lays off 3,000 employees.
Yikes.
The auto electric giant said Wednesday that curbed production of some of their most expensive vehicles after a second mass layoff in 7 months. It's fueling concerns over the company's ability to survive without making as many of its top dollar cars, and it's helped become a household name. The Model S and the Model X are the big ones that they put the rollback on. And the stock fell 4% because of this news. And the big thing to me was, and I thought was funny on this, Daryl, Business Insider did an article on this, but all they did was they talked to people who've been laid off. So I'm going to read a snippet from Business Insider, but the quote of this section was, like sheep to a slaughter. Did I read that? Like, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm already emphasizing my thought process on this whole thing. But one former employee worked at Tesla's delivery division in California woke up on Friday to Musk's email. He had tried not to think about it, but found it difficult once he arrived at his office, where his coworkers were discussing the email. He noticed one of his managers was being quiet and kind of standoffish as he arranged chairs in the corner office further from the employees. The manager told the delivery employee about 15 colleagues to meet him in the chairs. There, the manager read from a script informing him that they were being let go. The script sounded like it had been written by Tesla's human resources department, and the delivery employee said, I sat there in silence like a sheep to the slaughter. Once the colleague asked if he could speak to a manager one-on-one after the speech, The manager declined his request. The manager told the employees their positions had been redundant, and everyone on the delivery team was let go. The manager didn't provide specific details about each employee being laid off. The employees weren't given details about their severance packages, only a blank piece of paper on which to write their names and personal email addresses. The delivery employee then said his goodbyes and picked up his personal items and left. So this was one of a couple stories, and they all were all, oh, it was so terrible.
Sympathetic.
Oh, my God. I can't believe what they did to us. And all I could think was GM laid off 15,000 people here a month ago. I mean, five times the amount of people. Do you think there was one article written like this one by Business Insider about the feelings of the employees that were laid off by GM?
I can guarantee you there wasn't. I can guarantee you it was like the kicker at the end of the newscast. And in other news today, yeah. GM laid 15,000 people off at numerous plants across the world. Yeah. Have a good night.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. Okay, yeah. Very touchy-feely. And again, not to minimize the fact, 3,000 people, that's a...
No, God bless them.
Right,
right. Nobody should get laid off if they have a job. You know, but Tesla's a business like anywhere else. I think it's funny that they're held to a different standard in this day and age. Maybe maybe with the age group that's working there. Maybe just because of their founder, and you feel like you have a personal tie with that owner. I don't think anybody who works at GM feels like they have a personal tie with the... I don't even know who that gal is, the general manager of GM right now. Who is it?
Something Barra. Something Mary Barra? No.
No, she was the mayor of Pekin, wasn't she?
Well, yeah. Yeah, she was. Something Barra. Barra. I don't know.
Anyway.
Who's the British Bake Off lady?
That's Mary Barra.
Mary Barry. Sherry's Berries? Anyways, the Tesla thing, though, like you said, I think it's a hip, cool, young company, and then when things that are unhip and uncool happen to the employees...
We gotta make money. Oh,
bummer.
Yeah, dude.
I really don't think you care about my feelings. No, yeah. I don't. That's why he sent an email.
Exactly.
And your boss fired you via email, and then you got the whole...
Yeah, I want to talk to somebody. Yeah, no, we'll take your email address. So.
Yeah, we're not obligated. You seen Up in the Air, the movie of George Clooney?
No, I've never seen it.
It's like his job is a professional guy who gets hired to fire people.
Yeah, I heard it's pretty good.
It was really sad because it's kind of based on a true story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a compilation of people who made a lot of money during the economic collapse, firing people for Fortune 500 companies that didn't want to do it themselves. So, I mean, it's an ugly process. I'm sure it sucks, but to kind of paint this up as like a, woe is me. I mean, hey, man, business is business.
Exactly.
It happens.
It's interesting. It's a whole new environment, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know, but we'll get to another story later on that even though some of them were let go, there's some opportunity.
Absolutely.
For Tesla.
Yeah, where one door closes, a window opens. Or where a window closes and a door opens. How does that work?
Something like that. We need golden parachute? I don't know what happened.
A hatchback.
We need some sound effects.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, like a choir or something.
Angelic noises.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty of the local news now.
Yeah.
How much is the fine for texting and driving? Well, we did talk about the fine for not having your kids facing the right direction in a car seat. None of us want to talk about that stuff because it's boring and we're not soccer moms. But, hey, if you're a soccer mom, that's all cool.
Here's a tip. Wear your seatbelt, kids.
Exactly.
It's the law.
Put the kids in a rear-facing seat unless they're 40 pounds. But there's also a law that came out as of July of this year. Drivers caught using a cell phone while driving will not only get a fine, but they'll count as a moving violation that could lead to a license suspension. But then I've been seeing all these memes, and I've seen them, but Daryl says he's not. And I put this.
You're just online more than I am.
I can't believe that for one second, honestly.
No, I have not seen them, but I'm sure tonight on the way home it'll pop up.
Yeah, yeah. So there's this meme, and this one I shared was Amy Lopez did it, but it's in a big purple block. It says, "Caught using a cell phone or holding it while driving. $999 fine or a 3-year suspended license as of January 2019. Well, that's even wrong versus the Jesse White that said July 19.
Yeah.
Ouch. Beware, folks. So I don't know if that $999 thing is a big pile of guapo or I don't know what's going on there. So.
Yeah. That's interesting, though, like that why do memes take off the way they do of all the things?
Yeah.
But it's been illegal to talk on the phone without a hands-free device for, like, what, 5 years here? It's been a while.
At least, yeah. And I know several of my employees I work with, they get tickets all the time in North Pekin.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I was just driving. I was holding my phone. I got a ticket.
I was minding my own business.
talking on the phone
while driving, steering with my knees.
Yeah, and the cop caught me, that jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, you know, you're endangering society around you on a four-lane, you know, road, but, you know.
For starters.
Yeah.
And it's not so much the whole, like, well, I can't hold a phone and drive at the same time. Yeah, we did. We did that for, what, 20, 30 years? Oh, 20 years, okay. Yeah. We had a nice long run of that.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of studies.
Yeah.
And it turns out we suck.
Dude.
At doing that as human beings. It's your brain is thinking somewhere else. Kind of like when you're driving while you're, well, you have to go to the bathroom or you're starving or some other thing preoccupying your brain and you're not seeing what else is going on.
Now I'm looking back and thinking of the mid-90s when the bag phones were a thing.
Oh, yeah.
So could you drive down the phone with the bag phone to your ear and just be talking to somebody and the cops would look at you and be like, hey, what's going on? Just give a little high five.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no problem.
But I'm just talking on the phone over here. Don't worry about me, man.
It's me and my successful Motorola bag phone.
Totally legal.
What you going to do about it? And then you basically irradiated half your face because that thing was putting out so much
It'd be more like a hip cancer because it was down there by your ass. I'm sorry, your Botox.
Yeah, no, those bag phones were, sadly enough, they actually worked pretty well. Sometimes worked better than the phones we have now, folks.
I don't think I ever used one.
I used one once, and it was to have somebody pick me up. I was at a friend's, like...
You're so rich, Daryl.
No, I wasn't. Because I didn't have my first phone until 2003, until I was, like, out of school and everything. My parents were like, you don't need a cell phone. And then I got one, and they're like, we need cell phones, too.
See, he's, like, 30, I told you.
Yeah, pretty old. So, no, I used one. I was at a friend of mine's soccer game after school, and it's just a torrential downpour. Just awful, and one of my friend's parents had one. Like, hey, call your folks and have your mom swing by and pick you up.
Yeah, use our phone
instead of her dropping me off at my house like a normal human being. She's like, use my phone. She was a realtor. My friend's mom was a realtor. She's like, had the bag phone with her in the stands. You know, I was like, call your mom and dad and have them pick you up. I'm like, okay, and it was just so cool to use the phone.
Mom, I'm calling you from the stands.
Yeah, and then of course she's over here tapping her finger like it's really expensive. Hurry up, hurry up. It's like a bazillion dollars a minute.
Yeah,
whatever.
It's like calling from an airplane. I'm calling you from an airplane, man.
I love it. I love that watching the old like movies too, where somebody's like, "I got to get to a payphone," and you just start laughing. You're like, can you remember when your life was like, "How do I tell somebody? Yeah. I have to stop what I'm doing and find a payphone somewhere." Now there's like one payphone in downtown Pekin. That's like the only
you
one
keep
I know.
Pointing
of.
That one out, Pekin. I'm gonna have to find it and maybe take a picture of it.
Dude, that's the only
for posterity, because I don't know that it exists. But I'll go down there sometime and take some pictures of it.
Even Casey's were holdouts. They used to always have a payphone in the front. Now they pulled all those.
Yeah, I don't think it's a revenue generator anymore. So you know,
probably not. Also, probably the clientele might have something to do with that too.
Yeah, call me at the payphone at Casey's at 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
yeah. Or not even the payphone. Just call me at this number.
They wouldn't tell you where
exactly. But now you could Google the number. Anyway,
it's in a duffel bag behind the bus stop.
This leads to a national article. We're kind of backtracking here, but USA Today had an article. It said, Americans are using their phones in riskier ways while driving, worsening the nation's crash crisis. Although overall cell phone use is down, drivers were observed manipulating their phones 57% more often in 2018 than they were in 2014, according to research by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. This means people are putting themselves in significantly higher risk of dying in a car crash. The quote is, people are talking on their phone less than they were in 2014, and they're manipulating it more, which includes texting and potentially browsing on the internet and potentially using it for navigation, audio, and music, said David Kidd, the senior research scientist for the Institute. Who drives, and I see this every day, who's still driving down the road with a phone up to their head? Who's doing this?
I want to say,
please raise your hand out there. Everybody who's doing it, raise your hand and then do a V8 and just smack yourself square in the forehead.
I don't want to alienate half our audience.
I do, because you're stupid.
But
you have to know at this point. You can't do that.
Can I say, this is just an observation. This is not empirical evidence that I have backing this up. It's mostly women. It's mostly women that I see talking
women.
On the
phone.
Younger women.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see quite a bit when I go home, too. And I see a lot of this whole, like, instead of putting, like, the phone to the head, it's just the I'm going to hold it flat and pretend that I'm not talking, but I'm going to be shouting into the mouthpiece. Yeah. Like,
but you're still holding it so high everybody can see you.
Seriously.
Yeah, this should be a video podcast so you can see what we're doing here. There's a lot of arm motions going on.
Yeah, most of these people have like the Bluetooth hands-free in the car.
Well, you can put on speakerphone.
Put on speakerphone.
And set it on your dashboard.
Talk away. Yeah. Do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But, like, stop trying to pretend. Stop trying to... This is dumb. It's totally dumb. Or the people that are up there, like, composing a full text. I've got an older Google Android phone, whatever. Like, I can say, send text message.
Yeah.
And I can dictate it. Remember the old days in the future, like, you'd have machines that would do everything and you could talk to it? On the way over here tonight, I was sitting there telling it to play certain songs, and it's
mine does not amazing. Work that handy, because with Siri, if I hold down the button, the one touch, it goes through the radio, and then it doesn't always get the command. It's just a big pain in the butt.
Is there like a delay, too?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, so it doesn't work that well. You must have a modern Jeep vehicle.
Yeah, real modern. You connect ready. Misrecognition. That's all. That's my Jeep's favorite comeback. Misrecognition.
You know my favorite thing anymore is when customers come in and they haven't set their voice commands. They're like, this thing never understands a thing I say. And so I touch the voice key and I say, well, you haven't gone through the voice command thing. Oh, what's that? And you have to basically sit there and go through about 50 phrases with your car so it understands how you speak.
Say call. Yeah. Say mobile. Say this, right?
I'm going to tell you what. There's some people... You know, I mean, I've heard some podcasts where people are bad. You should hear some of these people talk in their cars. You know, it's like, hey, take it out.
Is that English?
Yeah, it's having a problem. And you try. And I tried to tell the guy one time, like, your voice is really hard for this vehicle to understand. Well, you know.
Oh, boy. I'm
like, man.
And you know what? For Christmas, I bet you they all got an Amazon Echo. Alexa. Odessa.
Hey. And maybe it'll be like the 10-year challenge with Facebook, where they basically are taking all this information. And, you know, have you heard this whole this conspiracy thing? They're going to take all this data of your old pictures and they're going to merge it with the young so that way they can figure out. Maybe Alexa is going to take all this voice information and they're going to figure out like some basically algorithm of human American speech.
Who knows? I'm sure it's all. You can take your old voice commands on Google and actually like play them back.
Yeah.
So I can actually go back and listen to almost every single thing I've told this phone to play. Some of which I probably never would publicly admit. Yeah. You know,
play. Never mind. No, sorry.
Play Cyndi Lauper's greatest hits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Lots of Melissa Etheridge.
I do like the Melissa Etheridge. Bonnie Raitt, too. I'd also...
Oh, I like Bonnie Raitt. Yeah, all
right. Right on. All right, so we'll see what happens with people getting tickets
for
their phones.
Get off your phones, stop for God's doing sakes, it. Man. Yeah.
Be an adult.
Yeah, all right. This one's going to fall into the local scheme. A friend of mine, he is a technician in another store, and he clued me in on this because we hang out every once in a while. Did you know that if you Google... Not even Google. I think you just do a job search somewhere. There is a Tesla technician position open in the Peoria market.
But, Eric, Tesla does not have dealerships.
That is a great, great call there, Daryl. So what is Tesla doing? We have to wonder. I talked to some people I know in the industry. And so to me, when I was talking and we originally were trying to figure out this idea in my head, you know, what Tesla is doing, I'm thinking, well, then there's probably some check engine lights. There's probably some small stuff. You know, and they figured, let's save the customer the problem of going to Chicago or St. Louis to get the car service. There's obviously lots of Teslas now in the Peoria market and the Bloomington market. You're seeing them. So Tesla's advertising this job is a service technician, all your ASCs, electrical information. You know, electrical knowledge is beneficial but not necessary. As a matter of fact, their requisites for this job did not seem that hard. But auto industry experience was a high plus. So the person I talked to in the know said that what he feels is Tesla is trying to, their technology company, they've grown, you know, basically up from nothing. They weren't a car company, but they're trying to deal with customer service issues that they're dealing with, and they don't know how to deal with it. So having a technician out in the field, having somebody with some car experience, will save them some, what we call CSI, where I work, customer satisfaction index, will save them some of these issues, some of the drama. You know, people in their ownership experience, they want to have a little bit, they want to raise that standard. And sure, if they can't have a dealership everywhere, they can certainly pay for one technician to be out in the field, help out with some of that stuff.
It also seems kind of like a concierge, you know, like, oh, I've got a problem. Yeah. I'll have my Tesla man come or my Tesla woman.
And how cool would that be to always have a personal technician, you know? I mean, when you go to a shop you trust, you always ask for the same guy. I see this all the time. They ask for the same service advisor, ask for the same technician.
Let me speak to Kevin.
Yeah,
exactly. Only talk to Kevin.
I only talk to Kevin. Or when somebody dies. My husband only talked to Kevin. I can only talk, you know, I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
Sorry, it wasn't Kevin. But anyway.
Yeah.
but no, if you had your own technician on call, your own, you know, this guy's name.
Cool.
If Reggie is your technician and Reggie's always there, how put off would you be in 2 years from now when Reggie moves on to another market and you got to get somebody else? But pretty cool.
Well, let me say this, too. I mean, a lot of the Tesla stuff seems like it would just be component swaps, right? I mean, there's so many modular pieces on that.
I think all the big stuff would absolutely have to be that. But I think the small stuff, software updates, maybe something needs to push through that they need some help with that they can't do through their network.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do a lot of network updates on the cars. They sit in your garage.
Yep.
There'll be stuff like that needs help. And the cool thing is, and we deal with this in my manufacturer, the cars are now talking to us. They're telling us that they have a problem, and we're notifying the dealership, and we're reaching out to the customers.
That's pretty slick.
When they can start driving themselves to the store, when they know they have a problem, that's when we'll definitely hit the paradigm shift on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's neat, though. At least you get prepped. You can kind of, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
A little bit more than just, it makes a noise. What kind of, can you describe the noise? It's like a wah-wah noise.
Yeah, yeah. Check engine light came on one time, but it's off right now. Okay, great. Yeah.
I'll right. plug it in. I'll do a history. I'll freeze frame it. And
We'll hope there's something in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So Tesla, if you're interested in working for a company... And it's definitely interesting on so many levels. You might want to check that out. Is it on Indeed or something? Like, how do you?
Probably. I
All
don't
right.
know. I
check
don't
that
know.
Out.
I like I said, I Googled just Tesla jobs, Peoria, Illinois, and that came up. So I'm sure you can find it. There's a million job sites.
Turns out the job is just driving them to Chicago to get serviced. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
I don't think you need ASC certifications for that, but maybe it looks better when you show up at the front door. You got the badge on your sleeve.
Got the patch, yeah. Right on.
Yeah. I'll be back in 4 hours, folks.
See you later. Car comes back smelling like White Castle. It was on the way. We don't have one here in Peoria.
All right, so that's going to lead into our...
Uh-oh. There it is.
Can I do it? Oh, yeah. Hang on. Ah!
It's all right. It's a new mixer.
I haven't done this in a while.
It's all right.
Our moment of Musk. Can't get enough of that one.
My favorite.
All right, so we're definitely going to put the backing music on this because I think that kind of lends to the segment.
All right, so what do we got here in the world of Elon Musk?
All right, so last time was kind of a review of last year's adventures, but Fortune magazine reports that sometimes it's easy to think Elon Musk is just pulling a fast one on his Twitter followers with his zany new ideas, such as tunneling venture called The Boring Company, and then Musk goes and actually digs up a test tunnel. Ha, ha, ha. In a tweet last week, Musk said that Tesla vehicles enhanced with autopilot will soon receive an update called Tesla Sentry Mode, acting as a 360-degree watchdog while they're away from their pricey electric vehicles, Musk said, in a rough beta that will be available in February. But in typical Musk fashion, he took onto Twitter over the weekend to elaborate with some more about the possible additional features of the Sentry Mode. During a robbery, he said, in Sentry Mode, the vehicle will play a sinister-sounding Toccata de Fuego in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach. While it may not scare would-be thieves away, it would at least provide the perfect soundtrack for a heist. If you're not familiar with Toccata and de Fuego B, D minor, I'm sorry, it's Dracula music.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. I just...
Because that's what's going to deter a thief, right?
Classical music, I think, has been shown to soothe wild animals.
Yeah, and also supposed to help your baby like learn like 20 languages.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe we'll class the place up.
I just want to say, Sentry mode. Not an alarm system or anti-theft.
Yeah.
No. Sentry mode. In South Africa, by the way, you can buy flamethrowers to put under your car so you don't get carjacked. But here, we're just going to do... It'll... Who knows? Maybe Count Chocula will come running and steal your car.
That would be excellent. That would be excellent.
I want overpriced electric vehicles.
Or the Count.
Yeah.
You have 1 second to leave. 2 seconds.
4 hours left on your battery. I don't know. Interesting, but this is real life, folks. This is not something that's made up.
Yeah, and generally speaking, he does what he says he's going to do.
Sounds like an April Fool's joke. Everything he says is just weird.
And that is your moment of Musk.
Like the decay on that.
I like that.
All right, so tune in next time. We'll bring another installment of your favorite segment of the show. I know a lot of people enjoy that. So
yeah, we can't get enough of that. We'll never probably get Tesla as a sponsor, I'm guessing.
No. We might even get some other...
Maybe we can get Rivian. Rivian probably loves these segments.
Rivian would love them. Always willing to talk to you, Rivian.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are in the press again here. So
yeah, there's enough. That place in Morton that we were talking about in the last episode,
yeah.
I had a lot of people tell me about that. So
no kidding.
But they don't even know we're talking. They don't even know that I've been hearing about it. So
yeah,
they're doing something over there. That's kind of cool.
And yeah. Autonomous tough.
They must be at the Los Angeles Auto Show or something, too. I think I've heard some talk.
Yeah, either out there or SEMA or something. I think they've had a presence there last year or two. So.
Yeah. All right, so that is enough for the news on this episode, and we're going to get into what we call the Riff Zone. This is where Daryl and I find some subjects that kind of been galling us this week. So.
Kind of free form, baby.
Yeah, and I loaded this episode up. I feel really bad that maybe I put so much in this episode, Daryl.
No.
That maybe I blocked you out.
It's full of what Tapao called your heart and soul. No, it's, fine. We have so much we can talk about, honestly. And driving over here, I had, we could do, winter tips and winter this and that and all, winter car stories. And what, it's like, we could have a show.
We could do a show every day.
Every day.
I believe we could. We could just literally pull up Automotive News and do a show every day. So if that interests you as a major media company. Yeah, XM. We'll do a radio show every day for you.
That's right. We just need a studio and 2-3 million tops.
Yeah.
That's
it. I think I can get by on 2 million.
Annually?
Weekly.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I meant, weekly.
All right. So I'm going to start the riffing tonight. The riffing. I had the classic call as a service manager and a service person over the last 15 years. I have dealt with this call more times than I'd like to admit. And if I had to guess, probably 250 times I've taken this call. It's basically a senior citizen who has been pressured like a mother before she called me to find out if she should have bought an extended warranty or not, because some slimy extended warranty guy sent her a letter in the mail saying, this is your last notification. Mm-hmm. If you don't contact us now, or they've called him on the phone even worse and said, if you hang up the phone with us right now, you're never going to get an opportunity to buy this warranty again. And they literally are crying when they call me. And the ones that trust me and listen to me generally haven't bought the warranty. But this lady who called me this last week, I didn't know her from Adam, and she just bought a warranty. She bought a warranty and was going to spend $105 a month for the next 3 years on this warranty. Mm. Because she's on a fixed income and she doesn't need expensive automotive bills. Well, first off, her even saying that line, it tells me that she's parroting what that person was.
Somebody planted that.
Yeah, exactly. They pressured her into that. Expensive automotive repairs. She's driving a mid-2000s Toyota Camry with 105,000 miles on, I think it was. I said, you're going to pay $4,000 for this warranty. There's nothing on that car over the next 3 years you're going to spend $4,000 on. Now, I could be wrong. There's a possibility something could happen.
But
the odds are there's nothing you're going to spend that kind of money on.
Even still, motor, trans, something like that, it's not going to be $4,000, is it? Yeah.
No.
Generally?
Well, I mean, if you put a used motor in a car, maybe we'd spend $3,200, $3,500 or something like that. But
forget that. I mean,
but what are the chances she needs a motor?
Yeah.
It's slim to none without somebody neglecting or abusing it. And I doubt her and her husband are neglecting or abusing it. So when it all came down to it and she called me, and I'm like, listen, I've never heard of the company. I'll honor their warranty if you come in here. There's no doubt about that. But I told her this. I said, I don't think you need this warranty.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't buy it. Well, then she goes right back into the parroting thing. I'm like, that's fine. I said, here's what I would do if I were you, because you're asking me a lot of questions about this company I know nothing about and I can't tell you anything about. Call the Better Business Bureau. So she did that, and then she calls me back an hour later. I called the Better Business Bureau. This company's got 750 complaints, blah, blah. I'm like, there you go. So she was smart enough to cancel the warranty. Hallelujah. I felt redeemed. But then she wants recommendations on other warranty companies. I'm like, really? Are we still going down this path? So I recommended first Fidelity. It's a company out of Florida.
I've heard of them.
Fidelity Warranty has been around for a long, long time. But I also told her we deal with I'm trying to remember the company we deal with in our backside, the dealership. And she got a car service or dealership. I said, if you really want a warranty, talk to our finance manager. You know, he can talk to you about something, too. And guess what? He had something for cheaper than what she was going to buy with these guys. And you know it's going to be honored at the dealership, so hey, God bless him.
Yeah.
But, folks, if your parents are in their 80s or mid-70s and they have a checkbook and they get calls, and if you ever look at their checkbook and say, Mom, Dad, what is this thing you're paying for every month? there are people trying to steal money out of their pockets constantly.
Yeah.
It just annoys me. And it's funny because as a car dealer representative, people would say, oh, as a service partner, you guys trying to rip people off all the time. You know, we're a small business, and certainly a Better Business Bureau affects me more than it affects some company that sells warranties. And word of mouth in local business, I don't need to be known as the guy ripping off old people or something like that. It's not what we do. When people say, you know, treat this person like your grandmother, I treat everybody like my grandmother. I'm not going to sell you something you don't need. But I can't get over these people just ripping off, just basically stealing from your family,
seniors,
from my family, and nobody talks about it.
Yeah,
there's got to be something against these people. The time has got to come where you talk to your parents, talk to your grandparents, and say, hey, you know, are you protected? Do you understand? Do you need help with this stuff?
Yeah, and to be able to talk through it like they did with you. I mean, yeah. I hate to say that,
she did a good job. I'll give her that. I thought she'd be weak and just keep the warranty.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't have somebody else to bounce that off of. You know, their kids don't speak to them, or they're embarrassed to ask about it. So I think you're in a good position, at least. You're a stand-up guy, and I applaud you, because I have heard horror stories. One of my friends was talking about one of their neighbors got bamboozled into some electricity aggregation program thing that wasn't the usual suspects. That's a whole other thing. But they came to the door and like, hey, let me see a copy of your
Electric bill.
I could save you money. And they do, and they start doing all the math and get all the information, all that. Now, let me ask you this, because my wife and I have had a couple of those mailers that come through for the extended warranty and stuff like that. And they have the VIN number.
Yeah.
They have the mileage.
Thank the state of Illinois for that.
They get that through DMV records, Secretary of State records?
Yep, he sells it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Because that's how they know. They know when you bought the car, and they know. I don't know if they know unless they buy it from Carfax, something like that. But when you buy a car and you make a transaction, they know, they record the miles and the year of the car. And that information is public, and not public, but they can buy it.
They can purchase it.
So what you do is you approximate it, you put it in some kind of whatever insurance companies do to kind of figure out, what the dynamics are. And so they approximate, and they send these things out in 3 years. So they know about when your warranty is going to expire.
I'm surprised at just how much, and again, it's not like every bit of personal info, but it's enough to make me think like
they know about me.
Yeah, they know a little bit more about me, and then they do it cleverly to where I see it with the water company too. It's like American Water Resources, not Illinois American Water. They want to sell like insurance or a warranty for your pipes and stuff in the wintertime. And I'm like, it's color coded. The logo is very similar to the actual company, and I've seen that from Daimler Chrysler. Kind of a knockoff of their logo and their prints and stuff like that. And I'm like, if I was not that sharp, or if I was up there in years, or just frankly I was so busy I didn't care. I'm like, what do I need to do? Oh, it's okay, fine, sign it.
Yeah,
I'm sure that happens more often than not.
Well, more often than not, when I was talking about those 250 calls I've taken over the years, I'll get somebody on the phone and say, I got a letter here from Warranty Protective Services.
Yeah.
It's in red and white. It looks all official. And they'll say, but I think I bought a warranty from you guys. And I'll pull it up and I'll look. I say, yeah, you did. You have a scam piece of mail. Throw it away. And they're like, oh, yeah, thank God. And they throw it away. But, I mean, that's a majority of them thank God for me. But the minority, those people are fighting for their lives because they don't know what's going on.
And here's the other thing. I just want to throw this out here, too, because I've had some people my age that have bought extended warranties, not when they purchase a car, but like, oh, I've got this older car. I got to get it a few more years, and I got no money. I'm just going to get this warranty and spend more money.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If you can't afford a vehicle as an adult, maybe you shouldn't have a vehicle. And that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But if you can't afford, let's say your master cylinder goes out. It's going to be like $300, but I had this warranty that I'm paying $100 a month for, so it saved me money. No, it's a net loss.
No.
You can go to AutoZone, get it. And here's the thing. Unless it's some super complicated BMW or something, you can, 9 times out of 10, the big stuff, you're still going to, your motor blows up, trans blows up, that's thousands, you're screwed anyways.
Yeah.
You might have to get something different. But if it's the little things like, I had to put an alternator in the car, that's like $100 most of the time. 150 tops, it depends. But
that's doing it yourself. I mean, if you come in the dealership and you get a manufactured part on an alternator, you're going to spend $350, probably something like that.
But then it's done.
Yeah, it's done. And you have parts and labor warranty. If you have us do it,
Yep.
It's a no-brainer. But here's the thing. She's spending $105 a month, and I misspoke. She had a 2010 Camry with 110,000 miles on it. She's going to spend $105 a month on that 2010 Camry with 110,000 miles for no reason at all. You know, in 3 or 4 months of just saving that money, she could have a net. Just let's just put a nest egg together of $400 or $500 and set that aside for any repairs. Because realistically, if that 2010 Camry needs a repair, $500 is going to take you a long way on anything that car could possibly need.
Right.
If not, take care of everything.
And again, not to try to presume like we know everybody's in the same kind of financial situation that
hey, insurance, the only reason you buy insurance, the only reason you buy warranties is for peace of mind. And I tell people that all the time, if you can't sleep at night knowing you don't have protection, then buy the warranty.
Have you ever bought an extended warranty?
I always do. I bought one on my Prius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We bought one on her Jeep too.
Bought one on my Tundra because I will use it.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, when something's squealing, something's making noise, check engine light comes on. If you don't have the warranty, guess what you do? You don't fix it.
Right.
If you buy the warranty, you go, hey, I got this covered. I'm going to get this checked out. So you're taking care of your car, and you're going to make sure it lasts longer. So buying extended warranty, make sure you're going to service it. People who don't use their warranties, that's a whole other show.
Yeah, we've touched a little bit on that. Do you buy the extended warranty on like the $12 like drill from Harbor Freight?
No, never do. No.
Do you want to buy the? Come on, you know, I'm
the guy who pulls the drill apart and resolders what he needs to do. So I'm that guy. But I'm not the guy who takes things apart on my car. I have people for that.
That's nice. Nice. You heard it here, folks.
Anyway, what do you got, Daryl? You got some riffing.
Well, one of the things I like to do in the wintertime in the Midwest here is to think of happier days ahead, which is car show season.
Yeah.
Being into older classic cars and whatnot, I do like going to car shows. Not all of them are the big judged, you know, kind of Concours d'Elegance, like fancy pantsy ones, but I do like going to some of those once in a while.
Fancy pantsy, I like that.
I don't know. It's real high end, like Duesenbergs and stuff. I appreciate them, but that's not necessarily my thing. But I also do like going to ones where they're judged and there's trophies and things like that. I never win anything. I never enter. I don't care. But I do like the little tidbits where you can take something that's, you know, a fairly nice kind of driver quality older car and maybe elevate it a bit. Mm-hmm. And now is that time of year where you can do that and prep for the next season. And a lot of times, I've seen this over the years with some of the car clubs that I'm in, a lot of the things that might hold you back from bringing your driver quality car to the next level a real simple. And Classic Motorsports had a nice little write-up that talked about kind of taking it to the next level, if you will. Mostly just talking about cleaning and touching things up. It's kind of the routine things like, you know, if your paint's burned off your valve cover from, you know, being painted 10 years ago, mm-hmm. pop that thing off and paint it. You don't have to paint the whole motor. Just, you know, do the visible, easy, kind of low-hanging fruit.
An engine cover re-shot, even a valve cover, oh, my God, people love seeing that.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, how far? And I get caught up in that, too. You probably do, too, sometimes, where it's like, well, how far do you go?
I don't get caught up in that, Daryl. I'm a four-wheeler, so I don't really care.
Okay, just put mud on it. It's good. It's fine. No, I've seen that, too, with even, you know, some of the off-road vehicles. You see ones that they enjoy it, and then they pressure wash it and clean it up, and it's, you know, it's pretty nice. And then there's others that never go off-road, even though they got, you know, 20 grand worth of
pavement princesses.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, so it's classicmotorsports.com is the link you got here. I'm going to share this on the website.
Yep.
I'm trying to open the document right now, because let's look at the 13 tips for elevating your vehicle.
Yeah, the 13 tips, and we can kind of, you know, we can hit some of the highlights, but the number one tip that they offer is find and fix issues. Which basically just starts with walking around the car, taking a real good visual of it. And if you see any problems that someone else is going to notice and it drives you nuts, guess what? It's going to drive other people nuts, too. They're going to notice that, you know, a little dented piece of trim or something like that. Oh, it's one day I'll pop that off. Man, pop it off. It's winter. You got 3 to 6 months. Get it done. Polish it off and put it back on there. And a lot of times, you know, we're not talking like paint blemishes that, you know, oh, I need to spend $5,000 in paint bodywork. Mm-hmm. That's a whole separate thing. Big problems, sure. Whatever. But if you're just kind of taking something to that next level, maybe polish. I know several people who have been kind of intimidated to cut and buff or wet sand a car that's got some orange peel, but otherwise the paint is in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Or even an old lacquer finish. A lot of the old GM cars were finished in lacquer. A lot of imports were finished in lacquer up until the 80s and 90s.
Which, you know what lacquer is, right?
Yeah.
Bug juice.
It's dead bees.
Yeah.
Right? Unless it's an acrylic, which is different. But yeah, old nitro lacquer, it's like Is it beeswax or something? Or?
Well, I always heard acrylic, like when you were doing home wood refurnishings, shellac.
Shellac, yeah.
Yeah, shellac was like bug guts.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like that plus some solvent and stuff. But yeah, don't be afraid to maybe purchase a polisher, like a dual action polisher. Polishing is key is one of their points here, number five.
What a dual action polisher, what do those things run?
You can get a decent one for about $100.
Right. Now, when you're talking dual action, you're talking about the one that we have, the kind that have like the two muffs on them.
Yeah, like it's the right angle. It looks like an angle grinder with a big pad on it. Yeah, as opposed to like the orbital ones you get. Like everybody's dad in the 70s had.
I have one of those somewhere, I'm sure.
They work pretty good as long as you know how to work it.
And you move frequently.
You move it frequently. I have an orbital as well. I don't have a DA. I'm going to be purchasing one just to kind of up my game. But I've done really, to be honest, I've been pretty amazed with the work I've done with the orbital, but I'm also not grinding that thing in there, and I'm using the right compound. So a little bit of paint correction, might want to get into that. That's some real easy stuff. Details make the difference. This is number eight, which is basically talking about underhood. You know, just I see so many nice cars at shows, restored cars, that people rack up some miles, maybe an older restoration, and it's full of grease and oil and stuff like that, and I get it. It happens, especially on the older cars.
Yeah.
Simple green, a hose, some plastic bags, clean that up. And you'll be not only amazed at how it looks at showtime, but also the next time you're in there doing an oil change, it doesn't look like you're a diesel mechanic. You know, clean some of the grease off. It makes it easier to work on. everything needs to work. Number 10. This is
I love, first off, the picture of everything needs to work. I mean, we got the guy in the old tweed hat. And the other guy who's in a suit. I mean, I'm looking at the right angle of the hood on this thing, thinking this has got to be like a 1930s Rolls or something like that. What am I looking at here?
Definitely looks British. Yeah, it looks like an old Rolls or Bentley, and I think across the way is either a TVR or a Jensen.
Yeah, yeah,
pretty slick. So yeah, it's a lot of British cars at this particular show, but yeah, everything needs to work. It if you have something old and you're taking it out and you're showing it to people. You know, there's nothing worse than pulling in a parking lot and, like, your taillights don't work. You know, oh, my horn's stuck on. Or I had one guy where the car wouldn't shut off. He was driving an older Jeep, and he actually went to try to shut the thing off, and he wound up disconnecting the battery cables and stuff. And I will say this. It was quite an embarrassing way to enter a show. And then, of course, nobody wants to look at it. Everyone's like, oh, that piece of crap over there. When it was a really nice forward-controlled Jeep pickup.
Sure.
Neat truck. You never see them. This thing was not ready for prime time. So you want to make sure everything works, everything's safe, and you're not just pulling something out. It's like, yeah, it's cool, it's old, right? No, make sure it's safe.
Yeah.
And then where was another one here that I liked? Contrast. It was about contrast.
So number 12 is the guy with the suit. He's looking sharp.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, getting his final trophy there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, get it done before the show. My dad and I have judged shows before where you do what's called a field entrance check, where you bring the car on to before it gets onto the judging field, it's got to pass all these, basically like an inspection.
Sure, sure.
And there's people like, oh, I need to put this chrome gravel shield on. Can I do that here? It's like, no.
No, you should have done that out there.
Do that. By the way, when it was sitting in the trailer for 3 days before you unloaded it.
That's kind of like Pinewood Derby, when you roll up Pinewood Derby and you're like, oh, yeah, I don't have the bumper quite right. They're like,
yeah,
you're coming in for judgment right here. So if it's not ready.
It's not under. It's underweight. Can I add some more?
Yeah, no, you're done.
No,
sorry.
You're done.
Yeah,
so nice little write-up there. The other thing here, I'll just last one. One of the other highlights they say is your eyes see contrast. So if you know, there's rock chips, or there's you know, your white walls are disgusting, but the rest of the car is great. You know, get some bleach white, detail it up. All the little touch-up, minor details. That's what wins car shows, and that's what actually makes you feel better. Give you a little pride of ownership. So
you know those dab brushes that we buy at the dealership. I buy them all on Amazon, and you can buy 100 of these, like 10th of a millimeter brush or 1 millimeter brushes.
Yeah.
For like $7.50, and if you just dab some rock chips, especially on a white surface.
Yeah,
I saw on this one there's like a white headlight ring, and just dab where it's a black rock chip on that white. They're right. Your eyes will glance over that immediately because you don't see the imperfection.
Yeah, you're focused on everything else. And not only that, it's good to touch up those rock chips, even on a show car that sits, because you know what? They'll sit in the garage under a car cover or something like that, and moisture gets in there, and then before you know it, some little tiny chip on a hood that could have been touched up, no big deal. Sure, it's not perfect. That's now turned into a big blister because moisture's gotten under that You know, it's just a good practice to get into, so that's not bad. Good tip to have a big bag of those. What do you call them? Like dab brushes?
We call them dab brushes. And I think if you on Amazon go dab brush, I think 0.75 millimeter is like a common one we use in a 1 millimeter.
Okay.
But yeah, they're great and they're nearly disposable. And I'm sorry, they're at least in the United States going to landfill. If you live in Southeast Asia, they're probably going in the ocean. I'm sorry. So
yeah.
I didn't recommend them.
But I need to do that because I'm always going to like Michael's because I don't even know what like. No. I'm going to like getting the fancy ones, like horsehair. I need a small thing to brush the thing to do the paint.
Yeah, and some teenage girl, what are you painting? And you're like, I'm painting my car.
Still life.
Oh, my God.
It's a Mini Cooper. Still life. No, I don't know. It's a good article. We'll share that. Okay, speaking of cool stuff and cars and things that you might want to be seen in public in, Eric, you got one of the probably coolest cars coming up here for your pick of the week.
Yeah,
car of the week.
Once again, I feel like I've hogged the show because I got like three things going on here.
No, you got good taste.
This is our final segment of the show. It's the Cars of the Week phase. This is where Daryl and I break out the virtual checkbooks and we buy cars with our minds and then we pretend what we would do if we owned them.
That's way safer than in real life.
Exactly. So I actually almost bought a car with my checkbook this week.
What?
Yeah, you know.
You've been threatening to.
Yeah, but here's what's stupid about me, because I don't have the money right now. But on Bring a Trailer, there was a 1991 Celica. It was right-hand drive. It had just been imported. Stick shift. Glorious car. I think it had like 80,000 U.S. miles on it. It was 120K or whatever kilometers.
Nice. What color?
Gray.
Gray.
Steel gray. And the car was mint. So what I do on Bring a Trailer, when I find a car, I think, if I want to steal that car, what would I pay for it? And I'm like, I'd buy it for $2,500. So I put in $2,500. Boom. You're high bidder. Yeah, whatever. 5 days left.
It sat there for five.
So, well, first off, I don't have the stones to go to my wife and tell her I might have bought a car for $2,500. But for the next 5 days, I own that car and Bring a Trailer. I mean, it didn't move on the bid. I mean, and to me, I'm like, this car is going to sell for more. Somebody imported it from Japan. Surely they would not sell it to me for $2,500. It's in North Carolina. And fortunately for me, the car went for $9,000. So I got out of it.
Okay.
I'm the ultimate stroke on Bring a Trailer. Had I got it for $2,500, I'm sure I could have convinced the wife.
If that went through, I mean, because is that about the going rate? I think we've seen a few between like 6 and 10.
Well, there's GTS sitting in Lincoln for $9,000. I think that car oversold, but Bring a Trailer oversells everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of eyes on those things.
Yeah, and it was a clean car, but it's right-hand drive, stick shift. I don't know who really, really wants that car. It wasn't turbo or anything like that. It wasn't all-wheel drive.
Okay. It was just, like a GT?
It was just basically a GT.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway. So let's get on to my real car. If I really broke out the fake checkbook and I was a millionaire Mr. Stahl, I'd buy this 1974 Volkswagen Thing Acapulco Edition, which has the candy stripe top and the blue hood, the white sides, and the blue bumper. This 1974 Volkswagen Thing Edition is approximately one of 400 examples made by Volkswagen Mexico and imported in the U.S. market in 1974. It's got 57,000 miles on it. It has 1.6 flat four. And as of the last check, it was going for a cool $10,000 to Bring a Trailer.
I always love this, too. This one was part of a personal collection. Well, isn't everything...
I got a personal collection here, Daryl. You want to see my personal collection?
Yeah, nothing in my personal collection would raise the value. In fact, it would detract because they all need work because they all sit. But no, this is cool. If anybody has ever seen like the old Jeep Surreys or the Fiat Jollies that have the cool, like something you'd see running around a beach resort.
This is definitely beach resort. This thing screams of if you rolled into Mexico and you need a ride from the airport to the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
If they're going to take the scenic route, they'd put you in this thing and serve you a cocktail and say, sit in the back here. But it is definitely a utilitarian vehicle. The Volkswagen Thing, it was basically an air-cooled industrial vehicle. You and I joked about this before. It's a Kubel wagon from World War II.
Yeah.
This car has no accoutrements whatsoever.
It has suspension.
Yeah.
That's basically...
Probably
you're lucky it's got its shock absorbers.
It was called a Thing for a reason. They were ugly. But now, because there's nothing made with lines like this, stuff starts to become niche because nobody makes anything that even looks like this stuff anymore, especially anything that's street legal.
Right. And the closest thing you could come to would be like a four-door Wrangler with the top and doors off. And even then, there's a lot more safety going on. This thing...
Oh, no. this is a death wish in a collision.
There's seatbelts, kind of. There's the suggestion of seatbelts.
I remember the last time we sold a Volkswagen Bug at the dealership. I traded for one.
Oh, yeah.
It was cool, but it had horse hair in the seat upholstery.
Oh,
and
wow.
All that horse hair was disintegrating, so the metal frame was really grabbing at you as you're sitting on the seat bottom. And all I can think of when I look at this car from 1974 is, yeah, it probably has horse hair.
Oh, yeah.
What movie was that when we were kids? Was that American Graffiti, where they packed the seats with horse manure or something like that when they reupholstered them?
Oh, no. I don't think it was that one. That's a good question for the internet. I don't remember.
Do you remember that?
American Graffiti is one where they tied the police car axle to the light post or something.
There was one where they took their car to Mexico to get it reupholstered, and they repacked.
Oh. Was that a Cheech and Chong?
It might have been.
I think it was a... Okay. There's a couple Cheech and Chongs that might... Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to Google that later.
All right.
But, yeah, definitely very cool car. Anybody is interested in those. There used to be a guy running around here. He had an orange thing.
Yeah.
I saw him, the first couple years that we were here at car shows. And there's still part of me that really wants one. But that's like, it starts raining. What do you do?
I don't know. Daryl, you're the king of garage princesses. So I don't know how this car would distract from anything you're doing currently.
That's true. That's true. Plus, you know, it's got a candy stripe top.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's custom.
Just put some little tassels on it. A Surrey with a fringe on top.
Welcome to Fantasy Island.
There you go.
Right, that's my tattoo, best.
Tattoo.
Ricardo Montalban
there.
That's
nice.
All right. So keeping with the German theme, I went ahead and picked a car based on something that popped into my Facebook feed a week or two ago. I was scrolling through. I'm a member of... follow so many car groups, I don't know what's what anymore.
I know that feeling.
I just see so many cool pictures, and I'm like, and my wife's like, what the hell are you? Anyways, I found it was a black 69 Mercedes-Benz 250, I think 250S or SL, something like that. The big sedan, or as I like to call it, the third world dictator limousine.
Yeah, this definitely has a African king.
Like Idi Amin or something. Yeah,
definitely. With the fake general outfit in the back.
Right. This thing is it's a big executive sedan, and the picture that I saw, there two is a two-shot. One was a side, one was a front profile, real low, and the thing had been slammed. It was on either airbags or just a super awesome suspension drop on this thing. And it had white walls with the really cool Mercedes painted kind of pie plate. Hubcaps with the Mercedes logo in the middle.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful car, and when you lower it, it just looks like, okay, it's pretty sinister looking. I don't know any of the other details, and I haven't been able to find that since. I took screenshots of the thing. I'm like, this is what I want with all of my heart. until I actually probably bought it, and then I'd hate it. But I found a 69 250S Benz up in Naperville, Illinois. Same thing. It was a black sedan with the red leather seats. And this thing is actually a little rough. It needs some work. But the nice thing about the Mercedes, usually, no matter what mechanical work or what body work they need, their interiors are usually awesome. You can have an old Mercedes, and I'm not just talking about the MB Techs, like the 80s fake simulated leather, which, by the way, those hold up.
They do, because I had one.
Did you?
I had two, actually. I had an 87 190E, and I had a 1991 560 SEL.
Did you really?
470 SEL. I don't remember.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, my wife still talks about the SEL this day.
When did you have that?
Oh, God. Well, that's a story for another show. Because I'm going to tell you, because all I can think of when I look at this car is every bill I paid at Kaufman Mayer.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I'm just going to come in for an oil change. That'll be $560. What do you mean? I just brought in for an oil change. Well, you got this, and this wrong with it.
Yeah.
And it's a Mercedes. You want to do all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Those days, they were painful, Daryl.
Well, this was only $9,500, but then there's a couple, all the restored ones are going for $40. And I'm like, that's a big price difference.
Yeah.
I wonder why. Because it would cost you an arm and a leg to get to that point.
So the screenshots you had with the slammed with the white walls.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if there's anything prettier I've seen in a long time. This car is gorgeous. And if you were to sell everything in your garage and have this thing, I think it'd be worth it. It's definitely one you could build the garage around to stare at and just drool over. I mean, when I looked at this car, I think I made the joke. I was like,
yeah. it stopped me in my tracks. I was like, what? Where is this? I don't particularly need
it. Car porn is what this was.
It is. And I always love that, too. Whenever somebody takes like some really cool shots of their, you know, lowered car, and it's usually in like there's a graffitied wall.
This is
in
the
background.
Industrial, like a industrial background, you know, some brick walls,
warehouse,
and old loading docks.
My wife probably hates me because every time, well, for
we
multiple
know she,
reasons.
We know she hates you.
Multiple reasons on the daily. But whenever I drive through the warehouse district in Peoria, no matter what I'm in, I got to like, yeah, I'm going to pull over here and take some pictures. Like,
you do it with your wife?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She's,
I could never pull it off. I give you so much more credit than me. I could never do that.
Most of the time, she'll duck. She'll just like duck under the dash. Like, I'm not with you here. I'm like, okay. So, like, I'll put some cool pictures online or something, a car that I, you know, staged perfectly, and the whole time I'm thinking of her like sitting under the dash with like coffee from like 30-30 just getting steam, just like, I hate this guy. But yeah, neat
my
car.
my wife would like lay across the bench seat and just read a book, and you know, just are you done yet,
are you finished with whatever this is?
Oh god.
Right. So speaking of cool European cars, it seems like you still have some passion left in you.
Yeah, because once again I'm hogging the show. This episode 11, Eric hogs the show, is what we're gonna call this.
No, it's good. It's collaborative.
Yeah, it is. I posted this one on the Facebook page earlier in the week because I thought it was worth sharing on the Facebook Marketplace, which is a place that we just all scroll around to find whatever useless trinkets we might possibly need.
Yep.
There is a 1966 Jaguar S-Type.
You said it properly.
I did. I had to stop myself. I thought I was going to say it wrong, but I said it properly. It is an S-Type. It's a straight six, four-door sedan, and it's a stick shift. And the coachwork inside is beautiful. The paint looks good on the outside. They said the transmission's not that great. It needs redone, but it's a stick shift. And it's $6,000 selling price. I'm thinking, oh, mama.
Yeah.
This is a showstopper. This car could be a daily driver. This car could be a show car.
Yeah.
I mean, $6,000. And, okay, let's just say you have to get a transmission for it. But do you think for a 1966 S-Type Jaguar that there's information out there on how to take apart the transmission for this? I'll bet there's a million resources for this thing.
I do, too. And I bet you they're different languages. I'll bet you there's a shop over in the UK. I bet you there's four shops. You could box this thing, that trans up, ship it over there, and there'd be a guy who'd go through it. A guy in his 70s,
yeah,
wearing, like, coveralls. Yeah. And he'd take 6 months.
Yeah.
But you could get that done.
Yes, absolutely.
When are you bringing home?
Daryl,
when are we going to get it? Get a trailer?
I need to make more money, Daryl. I need to, maybe I'll Uber on the weekends. I don't know. This car will be gone for. I showed it to my wife. That's usually when I, you
is
know,
that
like,
the is that the bellwether?
Yeah,
like?
It's like if I show it to the wife because I really want that. My wife did tell me the other day that she really, really wanted a RAV4 drop top. I showed her this car like 10 years ago.
Those are the very kind of like an Isuzu Amigo,
yeah,
slash.
The first edition had a removable center rooftop,
yeah,
hard top, and then it had a convertible back. She's like, I really want one of those now. And I'm like, I wanted one of those cars like 5 years ago when they were attainable, but now they're becoming non-existent. So,
is it one of those that's kind of have a cult following?
I don't know that the cult has figured it out yet, but I think they will be. I think it's going to be like that Volkswagen thing I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I think that 10 or 15 years from now, you'll see somebody driving on a RAV4 drop top, and you'd be like, what is that thing? Oh, you know, it's just a 1996 RAV4. I've never seen one of those.
Of course you haven't. I have the only one left. There's another. What's the Isuzu one that they made around
the Amigo?
Same,
the Amigo and the Rodeo.
Yeah, there was another one though that also has like cult status though.
Oh,
that
it's
was
like weird.
The Vehicross.
So that came out afterwards. And
okay.
That was like their progressive version of the Amigo. But the problem was that didn't have anything removable on it. It was still a hard top all the way across.
Gotcha.
Because
okay.
I think American safety standards must have changed somewhere in the early 90s.
It was after the Suzuki Samurai when you looked at it and the thing would fall over in a stiff wind.
And 60 Minutes did a video with the two wheels cocked
out
either
wheels.
Side. Yeah.
Yeah. My uncle had one at the time, and he's like, he thought that was hilarious. He's like, I'm going to take that to my vacation property. I'm not going
to
drive that anymore on a daily basis.
You're going to slalom at 60 miles an hour with an Isuzu Trooper and a Suzuki Samurai. Give me a break. It was so stupid.
Well, the wheelbase was like 2 inches, though. I mean, it really, I don't know.
You know what?
What's wrong with a little danger?
No,
I get it.
Get off my lawn.
Nobody's going to be taking something like that through a slalom.
You wouldn't think. Now, it's possible if you were on the interstate doing 70 miles an hour and you had to avoid something and you crashed. Well, you know what? That was an innate risk. And you know what? The Insurance Institute would probably balance that out. They would say, you know what? This car's so unsafe. You're going to pay four times as much as anybody else with a regular car. And you would say, yeah, it's not practical. I won't drive it. It would work itself out economically.
Let the market sort it out.
Exactly. But the federal government did not have to get involved with killing that car.
Now, the Bronco 2, on the other hand.
Well, somebody had to get involved with
that. Deserved
rid of that thing.
To go the way of the dodo. I don't know. That should be a whole other thing. Like SUVs of the past that should never come back.
I still love the Isuzu Trooper. I don't care. You know, and I love the Rodeo and the Amigo, too. So
yeah, they were nice-looking cars. Not necessarily running-wise, I think. The Rodeos had a lot of issues.
Yeah, I think the engines all were garbage, but I think the drive lines are pretty solid in all those.
A lot of popular swap right now is to take the older first-gen or second-gen, like, Trooper 2s.
Okay.
And I guess that chassis is, like, perfect size for, like, older, like, 40s pickups. So, like, the guys will drag, like, an old, you know, rusted-out barn find, and then they'll throw that on like a Trooper chassis, and a lot of the stuff lines up.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. That's something I didn't even know.
And it's possible because a lot of times the technology that they're working off of over there is so dated. Yeah, it didn't translate, so
yeah,
they hold on to those specifications for a lot longer overseas than we did over here.
Yeah, I mean, pretty cool stuff. I don't know. We'll see. I think that Jaguar would be wonderful. I think it would find a perfect home here in your garage, but, you know, we'll see.
It won't. I got too many hobbies, Daryl, not enough money, not enough time. So someday I'll get rid of these damn kids, and then this thing will be worth 18 grand. I won't be able to buy it anyway. So.
Yeah, and we'll be flying around in some Tesla with wings.
All right. So that is the last segment of our show. We do appreciate you listening, and we'd love feedback. If there's anything you heard on the show that you liked, or if there's anything you didn't hear and you want to hear more about, we certainly want to hear about your feelings on the matter.
Kind of. Just kidding.
I do, Daryl.
I know. We love feedback. Feedback is how we improve.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to say, but anyway.
I'm kidding.
enjoyed the show. Hopefully you did too, and we will be back next month or next week or in, who knows, a few days.
It's almost 12. February. Yeah, we'll be here.
All right. So for Throwing Wrenches, this is Eric Stahl.
I'm Daryl Scott. We'll see you next time.
Bye.